Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about herbicide carryover. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at Ranke's new E3 Precision Center Pivot System. Ag History Minute, we'll talk about the history of center pivot irrigation. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events, and we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilties out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. The pack is back on the attack, eh? Back-to-back wins. It's a good thing.
It's a good game.
Yeah.
It's just good. It's good.
Yeah.
It's good. No complaints.
They did what they wanted to do against the Cardinals.
Well, we're going to have our third kicker starting this weekend for the year.
So. Yeah.
They might as well just keep cycling just kickers until you find the right guy.
What's funny is I saw a thing like after the game, and the title of the article was "The Packers' Next Kicker May Have Just Left the Stadium," because Prater was out for the Cardinals, and then they've got a replacement. They're like, yeah, when Prater comes back, maybe they can get that guy.
But Prater's still out.
Right. So we signed Brendan McManus.
The Narv Dog, he kept missing. He was on the left hash, kept missing wide right. So it's like, if you can't figure out, every miss was the same exact.
Yep.
It's like, figure that
out.
Don't
you think that it gets in their head, like, as a kicker? It'd just be hard. Be so hard.
I think as a kicker, you have to be, because you're the guy, right? And you got 70,000 people there watching you and everybody on TV.
Yeah, but you have one job, and that job is to kick it through the uprights.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have to block. He doesn't have to tackle. His whole focus is kicking it through the uprights.
He was the worst kicker, so who cares who's next, right? I mean, we'll get another worst kicker in the league. Like, big deal.
And we'll see, because the Niners lost their first-string kicker. Their second-string kicker got injured. So now they signed Anders Carlson.
Oh, yeah, he went there.
We'll see if he does any better at... Which, I mean, I would say he was better than Narveson, just because Narveson was consistently missing. Like, I don't think there was a game he didn't miss, was there?
I think Carlson's problem was missing extra points.
Yeah.
Right, he'd miss the easy ones.
Right, he'd miss ones. And even watching him, like, he's tall, he's a huge guy, huge leg. Like, you'd think he'd be able to bomb these, and he just can't. So
yeah.
It was just...
Narveson missed one in every game. There was one that got called back by a penalty or something, so it didn't count.
Didn't count,
but he still missed it.
Yeah. It was not an improvement, so hopefully... I mean, McManus is a veteran kicker, so should have an idea of what you're getting other than, you know, I don't remember how old he is, but his leg maybe is a little weaker, because I think he was with Denver last. Like, as far as when he was a starting kicker.
Yep. They said, like, over 80% of his kicks have been outdoors. So that shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, just like when we pulled Greg Joseph over, who was a indoor kicker.
Dome Viking kicker.
Yeah. Did you find it, Todd?
Yep, 33 years of age.
Okay, so he's not... He's older by NFL standards, but not Mason Crosby.
I thought they'd bring back Crosby for some, like, sooner or later, maybe.
He's a...
I think he's done.
WTMJ. He got a job down
Milwaukee. Oh, is it? Doing
sportscasting.
Really?
Yeah, I just saw it the other day.
Oh, I didn't know he still was in Wisconsin.
Well, I don't know if he was, but he is now. Because there was an article he was...
Cool.
Going to start announcing.
See, J.J. Watt's going to announce T.J. Watt's game on Christmas Day.
Oh, yeah.
Like on TV?
Yeah, they're going to have, like, a four-man booth. Like, it was crazy how many people. And J.J. Watt was going to be one of them. And apparently, the Badgers long snapper wears 99.
Okay.
And him, somehow, him and J.J. Watt got connected. And, like,
and what?
Because it was his number,
right? Right. But is he just like, mad or
no? Oh. No, he's like, I'm gonna watch this long snapper because his like
he's got this good number.
He's got the good number.
Right. I fell.
Nope. Sorry, it was the fan. He's gonna be on the fan. Crosby.
Well, they're the official Packers station.
You will kick off new era for the fan.
Like the fan in Green Bay?
No, in Milwaukee.
In Milwaukee. Oh. Yeah.
Milwaukee's WSSP.
Yeah, they're the flagship now.
Yeah, they're what Zabe's on.
Yeah, because they're not.
They got John Kuhn. Yeah. They got
yep.
Butch, Brian Butch. Yeah. So
it's where all the old Wisconsin players go.
Yep. Go to
broadcast as the fan. The fan.
How about 70 degrees this weekend? Almost 80.
I know. My cousin's getting married tomorrow, Saturday, and it's going to be a beautiful day for an October wedding. And then Sundays, yeah, almost 80. Monday, I think, almost 80. Like,
and we peak here, do you think, color? Not quite.
It's pretty close, I would say.
I know you get north of Pulaski, and it's for sure peak there.
Yeah.
So that'd be good for your cousin. Good pictures and good wedding.
Picture. Other than, I think, I didn't look to see if there was a chance of rain at one point.
I don't think there is.
But I don't think they kept that in there, so.
It said windy today.
Even Halloween might be warm this year because we're trending down next week a little bit, and then by the end of the week, it's
the way it looked like Halloween was going to be like 30. Snowing because how hot it's been. But yeah,
yay.
Yeah, I don't know because they're talking, I think, by next Friday back up to 70. So
yeah, the Wisconsin like peak color map right now at travelwisconsin.com basically shows kind of your Antigo. Like Shawano, North Shawano, Marinette counties are all at peak. And then Southern Shawano and kind of across that way, Wausau, is at like 60% peak, it says. So
there's still a little green out there yet, here and there.
Yeah, that cold snap really seemed to turn a lot of trees.
It seemed like things are turning I've got trees in my yard that are dropping a ton of leaves for like 2 weeks now. And then, you know, and obviously trees dropped at different stages, but how hot we were. And then now this frost, seems like things are dropping at very different rates.
My trees are done.
Done?
No leaf. Well, nice. There's a few stragglers, but pretty much done.
Your yard is blah now.
Well, I shouldn't say that. I do have one tree. It's like a little birch tree thing that's got some leaves yet, but it never drops enough that it's that big of a deal.
So you're not at peak color, Matt?
No, I am beyond peak.
Do you rake? Do you rake or do you just let them blow on the neighbors?
I usually leaf blow and rake, yeah. I don't. My neighbors have, so it's funny because my trees usually drop first, and then the neighbors on either side, like, the one side will drop next, and then on the other side, my neighbors have a tree that like is the last in the whole neighborhood to drop its leaves, and that gets annoying because then it like drops them all at once, and they're usually not on top of the whole raking thing. So then, like, it doesn't pay for me to clean the part of my yard that falls in because then they'll just keep
coming back. Yeah. Bill, you live in the country, so you don't got to...
I have two trees.
Any farmers listen, and they laugh about leaf pickup.
Yeah, I have two trees that are 8 feet tall, so you can imagine how many leaves they don't drop any. We get more, like, when the neighbor chops their corn.
Corn, yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Given the option, I would leave mine, but I used to, and I got some ash trees that are dying, so I don't get as many leaves anymore, but... It would be so much; it would smother the grass. Like,
right? Yeah,
and with all the houses and stuff, you don't get enough wind to get them away. So, it would be detrimental to leave my leaves.
You don't have to mow next year, then,
right?
Well, if you mow over some of them, it's not bad. Or you kind of mulch them, but just the amount that it gets to be is just a crazy.
And that's usually the first batch. I just mulch,
right?
After that. This year, I don't think it'll be much of an issue, which is kind of nice, but also means I have to take down these trees. So
that also means that, there's a lot of ash trees, holy ash tree graveyards,
yeah.
Parks.
The park to the north or south of me, they took all the ash trees out, and now because I'm close enough to school, I get all the football game noise. Like there's no buffer anymore.
You can hear more stuff. Yeah. Oh yeah.
So now I get it from both ends. I get the fairgrounds, the races on Friday night, which is always.
It's always loud.
And now
yeah.
You get the the football games and stuff too. So
it is kind of like sad to see how bare some parks are now because of that.
Right.
Yeah. And they're planting new trees, but it'll take years for right. them to really amount to much.
Damn you, Emerald Ash Borer.
It's a reason to have diversity in your trees.
Yeah.
We had Dutch elm disease, and that led to a bunch of ash trees getting planted, and now all the ash trees are dying. So it's like, yep, let's not plant all the same tree anymore. Let's.
What do you mean? Ash are very fast growing and will fill this void that we have.
It's good wood. It's hardwood. It's.
Well, there's so much of it now that it's. Yeah, nobody wants it.
But yeah. Yeah. Anyway, you guys ready to get into our topic for today?
Carry on.
All right. Well, this year we had a wide range of planting dates. Basically all summer was there was always planting going on at some point or another of some kind, whether it was corn, soybeans, wheat, alfalfa,
sorghum.
So anytime we get these late years, you always got to remember to think about your herbicide program and rotational issues could be, or it could, the carryover from these chemicals could lead to rotational issues. So late spray, you know, sometimes we take out the residuals because we know it's going to cause us issues, but sometimes we don't think of it, or, you know, activation can be hinky like it was last year.
That's a good year. Word, hinky.
Hinky?
That's the technical term, it is, I believe. Yes. Hinky,
I don't know
activation.
If I heard that. I don't know if I've heard that in agronomy before. No. Hinky.
Hinky? No, it should be.
What is it? Is it a combination of like kinky and something else, Matt? Or where do you get the word hinky?
You've never heard the word hinky before?
No. Hinky? No.
No. Well.
Like
I'll have to look up the etymology of the word. I don't know. I've heard it before.
Quirky?
Hinky.
Is it like quirky? It is a word. Look
unreliable.
At that.
Dishonest or suspect.
Yeah, that's fair of last year's herbicide.
So, yeah, the unreliable meaning of hinky is what I was going for. So, but yeah, so we had issues there. And especially when we're looking at early spring plantings like alfalfa seedings this next year, you could have the risk of having issues. So,
well, and what kicked our butt, Matt, was it stopped raining, right?
Right.
Well, we were so wet, and then we got planted late, and then it stops raining, so that breakdown and the naturalness of how herbicides leave the soil didn't really happen because of how dry it was.
You think of 2023, that was a problem. We were worried already this spring of all these herbicides. We didn't have any moisture to break them down. So this is one struggle with herbicide carryover, is I do think every year we try to justify that it could be a problem. So just. It always could be, you know, if you don't get basically the perfect year or a very sort of wet year all the way along. But like we're talking, this year was a wet year, so it delayed us our planting. Well, now we're planning on things that say it's a 10-month rotation. Most of the time on a 10-month to whatever next crop, you're pretty much okay. However, if you planted in July, 10 months is not okay. So,
because, Todd, you had probably some of the latest stuff.
Yeah.
Like a one spray? Did you spray it once, or how many?
Yeah, like in July, as guys were still planting corn for corn silage, it became a concern of like, okay, what are we going to do here? And one of the things we talked about is these fields should not go to alfalfa next year or soybeans. Like these will go to corn next year.
Yep.
That'll make this easier to just not have to worry about it. And a lot of that too. Then we decided, you know, how do we want to spray them? Do we want to Because then you try to do something very low cost and do it in one pass. So we're not having to do like spraying July corn in two passes or even like late June, mid-June. That gets weird.
Right. Because now your second pass is in August probably.
Yeah, right. It just doesn't work well. So a lot of those we went to like a one pass pre with just some Duaclisto atrazine kind of thing. But again, if you're going to beans or alfalfa with that, it's not going to work. So these are probably going to for sure be corn next year or something like that so that we don't have that risk of carryover.
Yeah. Yeah. So knowing your rate, your chemical, which you hopefully do, it's pretty easy to go back and look and see. I think what compounds it this year too is we had some prevent plant acres. We had other things. So it's like, your rotation's probably getting messed up, and so it's.
What's funny is in the battle of 2024, you were sort of thinking of 25, maybe a little bit, and trying, you know, like,
yeah.
But a lot of that got thrown out when the battle was, and you just went to like. Right. That's how do I figure it out for this year?
That's a future me problem, right? Let's worry about today.
Right.
Tomorrow Bill is we don't in trouble.
Care. Yeah, we don't care about tomorrow Bill today. Let's worry about feeding our cows today.
Mainly the problem I think it happens is you have a crop plan going in, so and it's already version 5, say in April, and all of a sudden April gets crazy, so you change it, and then this year where May got crazy, and then you were planting something into June. Well, as hard as you kept having to change the plans multiple times, well, then you can't look for next year when you're
right.
changing it no. so many times. Right. You know, like I remember the first change is like, okay, well, if we do this, you know, then next year we'll seed this to alfalfa, or this will be wheat or soybeans or whatever. And then by the last changes, you're just like, yeah, whatever. And even this year with the amount of prevent plant, there was enough winter wheat that went on those prevent plant acres in the fall, or you know, or new seeding alfalfa or something like that. So some of that already did start this year where we did things for next year that was different kind of early as well.
Right. So yeah, it's important to think about for that part of it too, and depending on where you sat with forage. I mean, we had, you know, excess but low quality alfalfa yields this year. Corn silage was kind of all over. Some guys had decent silage. There was some that was...
Well, and here's the other thing to consider is if we trashed fields harvesting this summer, right. first and second crop, we wrecked them.
Oh,
right.
Like the alfalfa fields.
Maybe those weren't fields we were going to plow up, but maybe now we have to because we wrecked them. Okay, man, come on.
Wrecked them, darn near killed them. Sorry.
So maybe there's some fields that we're going to see down next year that we hadn't planned on it because of now we have to rotate some alfalfa out. So keep that in mind this winter, this fall, when you're planning your crop rotation for next year, you know, think about that. Like, when did we spray the corn herbicide, the fields we're going to see down? Because maybe that wasn't a 25 seed down. Maybe it was a 26 seed down, but it has to be moved up because we lost hay that we weren't planning on.
Yeah, winter kill could be a whole other aspect to this that, you know, if you're looking for spring forage next year and you're going to plant something in the spring, you know, it's going to be an afterthought of, well, the, you know, I could do this and that too you got to watch because all winter you'll be like, oh, okay, we got our plan. It's like you said, Todd, we go through 5 versions before we hit planting season. So it's going to come up again. It's just a matter of... Hopefully having good records and keeping track of what went where and what you have for options moving forward.
Yeah, on normal years, usually this...
What's that?
You don't even think about this on a normal year.
No.
You know, most of the time you have yourself set up well and stuff sprayed at proper times that you just don't even worry about carryover. You wouldn't even use that chem to begin with because that's just too long of a carryover. It doesn't fit in my system. But when things like this happen where it's not normal and it's out of your normal system and you're spraying in late June or July or August some products that just aren't normal to be spraying, it is something to consider. So even atrazine, we can't spray atrazine in August in Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, after July 31st.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So when I had to look that up this year to double check, because I was spraying we had to spray some atrazine in July, that you know is not normal and not good. You know, it's something to really watch then that how do we handle this for the coming year? So yeah, I think that is good to bring up, Matt, is on years where that aren't normal like this for planting and then drier years. We really got to make sure we're considering it and watching these dates.
Because a lot of times in some years we're flirting with it anyway. And in your typical spray, like you're pushing the boundaries of what products can do. Like one I can think of is Acuron with, you know, is it the meso in it that's 18 months to alfalfa? You know,
it's the atrazine.
Or atrazine.
It's atrazine. Yeah. Callisto is 10 months.
It's 10 months, that's right, yeah.
the meso is 10 months. So it's a lot of things. When you look at the book, it is crazy how many are like, you know, 0 to 30 days. And then you get this break where it's like 8 or 10 months and then the 18 months. So obviously when they do these studies, these residual studies, that seem, you know, it costs a lot more and it's a lot harder to get those shorter ones. And the longer ones can be, you know, a lot easier. So it is tricky in making sure you kind of look at the label, look at the book to see what's what. But a lot are 10 months. So, you know, 10 months you go. So if you sprayed, you know, mid-June, basically you have till the next mid-April, which is
pretty accurate.
Pretty fine. Yeah. So the 10-month one usually is okay. But when you got, you know, into July and then you've got mid-May, that's different. That's where you run into more problems.
Right.
So that's the part, is watching your July spray dates might be a thing to look at. Is you don't necessarily have to go back in your log and look what you sprayed in, you know, April, May, June. But when you get into late June and July, those you maybe want to write down and kind of have a note of what you can and can't plant.
The only thing would be is if you do, like, we get an early spring where you can plant alfalfa in March or early April, right? Then that could be a consideration.
One thing is we're planting there's a big push right now planting soybeans much earlier.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been working. I mean, this year my best yielding beans are the earliest planted beans. So I think we're going to kind of keep pushing that. So one of the watch outs would be is if on your corn herbicides is watching that we spray that early, or maybe we've gone to more of an early post in general, but say you're Acuron GT. That's an early post spray.
Yep.
You spray it when the corn is up, and this year that may have been in June and probably was in June when that corn was up to spray that, and then you got to wait, you know, you want your 10 months to basically to get to soybeans. Well, that could change then if you wanted to plant them real early in April, right, or something like that. So you might have more carryover from the meso or from some of those products. So that is kind of one of the more watchouts for beans, is we're just planting them a lot earlier and doing things differently with that.
Yeah, but either way, I mean, I think we say this a lot, but it's always good to know your chemistry, watch your plant backs. But in these years in particular where we've had, you know, two kind of funky growing seasons in a row, it's kind of highlighted the importance of remembering what was sprayed where and keeping an eye on those plant backs, because it doesn't take much to forget a field or, you know, to get in the planter and get going. And you're like, you know, this field's ready now. I should just go because I can, you know, I was going to seed down this field, but now I'm going to go to this field. And all of a sudden you're, hey, either it just doesn't come up or it comes up and it looks like crap. And you're like, well, what the heck? And so it's an important part of planning that can't emphasize enough how much it is to keep track of that and to make sure you try not to shoot yourself in the foot.
And that happens a lot, right? Like, we got a plant, so this field's ready. Let's just plant it. And yep, we don't quite, all the thought we had given to our rotation in January kind of goes out the window because Mother Nature kind of dictates our world.
Yep, she gets the final say.
It's funny, Todd, you talk about soybean planting date. I got a grower that's kind of working through some acres right now, and one field popped like way higher bushels than the rest. And I'm like, why on earth? And that field got planted first, and then we had a break, and then we planted the rest of the beans.
Yep.
That field ran 61, and it was planted like April 27th.
Right.
And then everything else, like I said, was a break, and that's running mid-50s. Same kind of ground, so like...
But I've even had a bigger swing on two of my farms. One, it was like from like 80 bushel down to 40.
Wow.
I was like, holy man. Yeah. And looking at the beans all year too, the resiliency of these beans now, and I mean, obviously we worry about frost. We know that part. That is the biggest worry, but in general, we've been able to seem to get by with that not being a problem.
Yep.
it's almost like if the conditions are right, the bean just sort of sit there. But yeah, just a huge, just seeing that that's a really big push. But like I said, if also now you didn't adjust your herbicide program
right
to account for that, it's not going to work. So back to our Acuron GT idea. If you're spraying that and it's getting later into June that it's not going to work for the 10 months, one idea is you could just use Acuron or make your own Lumax, spray Duclis or atrazine pre, come back with Roundup to clean up later and, yep. and maybe a Status or a Diflex or some sort of dicamba product if you do have some other weeds, and that does leave yourself open for a lot. And this year I did do more of that, I guess, with the later plantings. We did the foundation rate of pre, and then we just figured it out later and did something that has, you know, like a Roundup and a dicamba that most of the dicambas are pretty low as far as it goes for, you know, for carryovers. A lot of those are 3 months, you know, 60 days. So you don't have a lot to worry about on those, which is nice. The one that also is getting me lately is Liberty, because we're using more of it, which sure. is good, and it's working well. We've had podcasts on that. It's working great in soybeans. As we get more Liberty corn, that's going to open up things there. And Liberty's a unique one. It's 6 months to alfalfa, 6 months to sweet corn. And then soybeans at zero, which is nice, and field corn at zero. But then to like your wheat and barley and some cover crops or something like that, it actually is 70 days. But you guys have had it where you've interseeded into that and it's been fine.
Yep, we've used it. And actually I don't remember which version of the book we're referencing here, but if you look at the actual Liberty label now, they do have a separate like an entry for cover crops and stuff. Because that's what I noticed when I first talked to one of the farms that was going to do the Liberty, is they still do recommend waiting a few days after spraying it, but it's, I think, like within a week as opposed to the 70 days for the cover crop side of things.
And that's such a help if you're going to like interseed in corn, because we struggle so much with water hemp, and it just gives us another option to get that water hemp out of there before we interseed, and that's such a struggle.
Yeah. It is interesting because it is on the label now, which is neat. So the Liberty label has cover crops listed,
yep,
which I think is cool. And it says 7 days, and then there's a star, so you got to read below.
Yep, you got an asterisk.
And it says, planting of cover crops for the conservation purposes may be planted in fields previously treated with Liberty, as long as these cover crops are not grazed by livestock nor harvested for food. So that's an interesting thing to do. For best results, do not plant cover crops less than 7 days after an application, nor before half inch of rainfall or irrigation has occurred. So it's kind of, too, if you get
rain
matters there, too.
Yep. Sure. Because, Matt, you have a farm that interseeds and gonna graze, right?
Yeah, and they were not the ones that used Liberty. But,
right. But that would be a concern.
Right. And really, that could be a whole other podcast episode, is, you know, the idea of herbicides and grazing and what restrictions are there with different chemicals. And it is something that it's out there and it's on labels, but it's something that kind of gets ignored sometimes.
Right.
And
Or forgotten
yeah. about. And
I think we're just trying to look for options that work, right?
Right.
So we're like, let's try this, let's try that. Right. And we're not worried about.
And those are different when they're not your crop.
Right.
You know, these are a cover crop. They're not the crop. Like even in the Liberty label, it says, you know, basically for Liberty, it says failure to comply with these restrictions may result in illegal residues in rotated crops. So it's actually more of a residue thing than the crop isn't going to grow or work or something like right. that.
Which is why they're worried about it grazing.
Right.
Yep.
Right. That is a good point, Matt, that you bring up, that it was, we got the UW book, A3646, you know, the Wisconsin Bible. I'm sure your state, wherever you listen, has one. And we use this, you know, I go right to that back page all the time. But some of those, you do have to look at the label. That the book can't kind of get all the nuances and the differences and all that. So,
and this is going to increase, right, with the push for conservation. More labels are going to have cover crop.
Yeah, we're seeing
information on it.
Seeing it on the label this year made me really happy.
Yeah.
And because that is, I think, what a lot of guys are looking for is we need to know the options. And, like, there are, especially in the case of Liberty, like you said, if we looked at in the book here from that standpoint, it's 70 days. But when you look at the label, they've updated that.
Well, especially to go from 70 days to seven.
Right.
That's a huge difference. You know, that tells you, like I said, that tells you that it's a residue thing, not that it holds it back or does anything. Right. Or
it's not an agronomic thing per se. Right.
And I think a lot of people think of Liberty as pretty much akin to Roundup.
Correct. Is that burn down type.
Oh, yeah. Because like Roundup, it's the next day you can be out there planting and doing whatever. So that's an important distinction from glyphosate to glufosinate. So, but yeah, bottom line, keep an eye on those things. Should do it every year, but especially in these years. And Todd,
yeah, we had some watchouts we talked about. For the biggest thing I was seeing is as we plant beans earlier, that's a watchout. But then for beans going to corn, there is a few that always seem to get me, and one of them is Flexstar. The sort of Flexstar and then Prefix, which is a premix of Flexstar and Dual. But that one always seems to kind of creep up, that all of a sudden you most of the time what's nice with Prefix is it's got Dual in there, so you're spraying it at V3 soybeans or earlier. It's kind of more of an early post spray, and it's 10 months to corn, which isn't crazy, and it's 18 months to alfalfa. So, I mean, that one, you know, kind of if you're going to spray that on your soybeans, you really can't rotate to alfalfa at all.
Right.
Sounds tricky, but where you're doing straight Flexstar at times, that one can be used. Maybe you've got beans that don't have a trait in them, like Xtend Flexed or Enlist, and you're just using Roundups or conventional beans, that you're spraying Flexstar a lot of times later, you know, up till the label says, and I forget the date, you're not supposed to spray too late either. But anyway, you start pushing that 10 months. So that one seems to creep up on me. Some of the authority products are early, but those are all spraying pre, so that works fine.
Yeah, you can't spray them once the beans are up. So
right. And then now as we go into more of, say, a Liberty 2,4-D mix with some Roundup, that's a pretty wide open window there, which is nice to go to. So that one, Bill, do you have any other watchouts in beans that seem to get you? Or?
No. I was just looking at a grower that we do Prefix on, and the last stuff we sprayed was around June 10th-ish. Some of their later planted beans we did spray with Prefix June 10th. So
then you got till April 10th to plant your corn, you know, which, wait till then.
Which we're not going to plant corn April 10th here. So
that's what you say now, but
yeah.
No. Some farmers think if they would have planted their corn April 10th this year, it would have been better off than waiting till May 10th.
That's true.
That's true. That's not every year. All right. So there you go. Some things to consider as you're moving forward with your herbicide programs and your planting rotation for next year. Make sure to keep an eye on what you used, when you sprayed it, and what the plant back restriction may be on your next crop. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. So Reinke is unveiling the E3 Precision Center Pivot System. The new series claims increased water efficiency and streamlined maintenance. So Reinke Manufacturing has unveiled its E3 series center pivot system, the third generation of the Reinke Electrogator center pivot system. Takes things to the next level, according to Mark Virus. That's a really unfortunate last name. I can't imagine he didn't get a lot of crap in high school for that. Manager of Mechanical and Structural Engineering at Reinke Manufacturing, it's the first of its kind to have precision spacing from beginning to end. So E3 has a series of spans and end booms with uniform coupler spacing in 30-inch and 60-inch intervals to ensure uniform water application rate the entire length of the system. The goal for the E3 is to be as consistent and precise as possible, according to Cody Bailey, director of product management for Ranky. Wider distance between sprinkler locations of previous pivot models resulted in increased nozzle size and more water applied to compensate. So anytime they vary the amount of water across the machine, it impacts the ability to be uniform. The E3 precision irrigation system has also included a variety of features that provide enhanced stability, reliability, precision, and efficiency across all terrains and conditions, such as customizable configurations using precision spans from 80 to 220 feet in 20-foot increments, and the in-demand 175-foot span, as well as precision inverted truss end booms from 10 feet to 110 feet in 10-foot increments to maintain uniform outlet spacing regardless of span and M-boom configurations. Ranky Lock, or Rain Lock, a anti-racking truss system that designed for strength to deliver tighter tolerance and maintain consistent span crown that withstands adverse environmental conditions and challenging terrains. The exclusive Ranky V-ring seals on every pipe connection to eliminate water flow reduction and power precision watering. Single leg tower design to reduce crop loss as it moves through the field. Maintenance-free bearings and durable materials, coatings to prevent corrosion, minimize maintenance, and eliminate the need for grease. ESAC, which is a series of electronic swing arm control or corners designed to irrigate corners for full field water application accuracy. So, no more dry land corners, I guess. Yes.
E3 that they... Because when I think of E3, what do you think of?
Yeah.
Enlist E3 soybeans, yeah. Yes. Which that looks like they trademarked Enlist E3, because there is a trademark on it.
But not sure. E3.
But not just E3.
But yeah. Then like E3, there's a bunch of other... There's some E3 Expo in Energy, Environment, Economics in Los Angeles, California.
Yeah.
There's the E3 spark plugs. I've seen those. They're more for like... They're fancier, like when you want to put in your lawnmower or something like that. Oh, they're like that, yeah, green kind of label. But anyway, yeah, I just thought that was odd that they chose E3 because in the egg world right now, I just feel like you think of
the type of Enlist
soybeans. Yeah.
Well, it is the, I guess, technically just a shorthand for the Electrogator pivot system. It's
easier to say E3 than Electrogator.
It's E. That's what the E's for.
What's the three? It's third generation.
Third generation.
I got it. Sure.
So that's why. But anyway, yeah, so some added benefits possibly to the next generation of seven center pivots here, so could be valuable for those who need irrigation. Now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So since we're talking irrigation, we'll do a little history of center pivots. In the mid-20th century, Nebraska farmer Frank Zybak invented center pivot irrigation and transformed agricultural production worldwide. Using Zybak's machine, farmers in the semi-arid regions of the Great Plains could efficiently irrigate acres at a time and thereby increase yields on previously marginal land. By 2013, center pivots irrigated nearly 28 million acres across 57,000 farms in the U.S., making it the most widely used irrigation technology in the country. So he left school in seventh grade to help with his father's farm and blacksmith shop. Zybak became a skilled metalworker, an inventor who would go on to earn 9 patents. His first was for a driverless tractor that plowed fields in concentric circles, a tractor he built in his father's shop while still in his teens.
That's awesome.
He then began developing a self-propelled irrigation system after observing another farmer irrigate crops by using a tractor to systematically tow a long pipe outfitted with sprinklers across the field. By 1947, Zybak's system featured 2 sections of pipes on skids, suspended from cables by 2 towers. By 1949, the device included 5 towers with pipes running on wheels and could irrigate 40 acres. He then added water valves for siphoning pressurized water from the main pipe to drive the wheels and maintain tower alignment. In 1952, he was granted a patent on a larger irrigation system with a 600-foot boom that could water a 135-acre circle, all but the corners of a standard 160-acre section of land. In 1954, Valley Manufacturing, a small manufacturer of farm equipment, acquired the patent rights from Zyback, and its engineers improved the machine's efficiency and dependability. Today, the Omaha-based company, since renamed Valmont Industries Incorporated, is a global leader for center pivot systems and other agricultural products. So there you go. Think of Nebraska the next time you think of center pivot irrigation.
Awesome. Thank you, Matt. Thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It is very easy. All you need to do on your iPhone is go to Apple Podcasts and search Tilth Talk Radio, or on your Android smartphone, download an app like Podcast Addict, and there you can also search Tilth Talk Radio and find us. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. You just go to tilthegg.com/podcasts, and you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now it's time for Cool Beans That's Corny and some current events. So, Cool Beans?
Cool Beans.
Wow. You guys
I jumped the gun. Sorry.
In sync.
That was like a...
It was kind of impressive.
Yeah.
But start again. Try again.
So, Cool Beans?
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. All right. Our Cool Beans this week... NAICC, which is the National Alliance of Independent Crop Consultants, Wisconsin Farm Tour focused on finding common ground. So this fall, NAICC and the Weed Science Society of America hosted a farm tour in Wisconsin for the Environmental Protection Agency and Fish and Wildlife Service. Officials from both agencies were there to discuss what successful implementation of the Endangered Species Act mitigation practices could look like for EPA and FWS, brainstorm on how to define success and find common ground. So I was fortunate enough to help with this tour on one of the stops, and it was neat to see everybody kind of work together. We had farmers, we had consultants, EPA, Fish and Wildlife. So it was a good tour, I thought, from the part that I took part in. I wasn't on the whole thing, but they stopped at a farm to look at some of the conservation practices being used there. They stopped at the Great Lakes Ag Research Center, Coloma Farms to look at potatoes, cranberry farms, so all the big things we have here in Wisconsin as far as agriculture goes. So it was a good thing, and good to have that discussion with people that, you know, and know that farmers and other ag professionals are involved in the process is really important. So it's a neat thing that happened, and glad to have been able to take part in that. Our That's Corny this week, the abrupt closure of Pure Prairie Poultry's processing plant.
Say that three times.
Yeah,
times.
Right.
Yes, PPP.
PPP processing plant.
As Wisconsin chicken farmers scrambling. So, it's kind of a bad situation when you have thousands of birds that don't belong to you, and but you're responsible for feeding them, and the company that normally pays you to feed them says, yeah, we're out. See you later. The owner of Phila Farms, Terry Phila, says, we just got to get the birds out. Now we have to worry about finances, how we're going to pay bills. Nobody's stepping up. Pretty embarrassing for us, asking for help. Hard not to have tears in your eyes and break down and start crying when you think about the nightmare that these farms are going through. So several farmers in western Wisconsin are facing this. The abrupt closure of the poultry processing plant, another triple P there, is resulting in this dire situation. Farmers like Terry Phila have to unload thousands of chickens and soon. Hundreds of thousands of dollars are lost as a result. And, yeah, with the company kind of abruptly just shutting everything down, there's a lot more questions than answers. So it's unfortunate to have those contracts and stuff in place, and now they're not being honored.
It did seem like reading the stuff that people on Facebook were going there and, like, for a dollar or two a chicken, like,
sure.
You could go... basically grab your chicken out of the barn kind right. of a thing. Yeah. Like buy one. And it did say like, these are not pets. These will not be good egg laying chickens. Like they're,
you need yeah, to butcher them. Like,
they'll be, need to be butchered. So yeah, right. it was,
which but, for a buck or two a chicken, I mean, butchering cost is going to cost more than that.
Yeah, so. Right. Right. So it was of smart and unique way to like, what, cause what else do you do with them? At least they, you know, went to somebody to use them and
right. You'd hate to see them be wasted. Yeah. Just dying and yeah. this pile of rotting.
Chicken. Right.
Yeah.
So it did seem like it was working as a tool to kind of get the word out and get people out there to do that. So yeah, unique situation and yeah, not good.
It does say in the article here that technically you can't sell a contracted bird, but at the same time,
well, that'd be hard to. Yeah,
so
you're trying right.
They're not going to pay you for the contract, so I have a hard time thinking anyone would come after you for breach of contract.
Well, they probably breached the contract first by not taking exactly. delivery of their chicken.
Yeah,
yeah, they should just drop all these chickens in the
in their parking in lot. The
yeah,
Pure Prairie. Yeah, drive them to Minnesota.
Here you go.
I don't know, how many chickens can you fit in a semi?
I don't want to know.
I don't, yeah.
And how many would be left after, depending how close they are to Minnesota, yeah. it's a couple-hour drive. But yeah, it's unfortunate. So hopefully that all gets sorted out for those farmers who are dealing with all that. And now we'll wrap things up with our Field Good Friday. So Northwest Wisconsin farmers have been donating to hurricane relief. So hay and other supplies from Northwestern Wisconsin have been donated and delivered to hurricane victims. Kurt Wolk is a truck driver who also helps on his family's Elmina, Wisconsin farm. He hoped to get enough hay to fill his flatbed semi, but donations kept coming into the Barron County Fairgrounds in Rice Lake from as far away as Superior and Mondovi. So there's two flatbeds and three van trailers full of mainly hay, and one van trailer had mostly all personal supplies and some fencing items. They were taking them to a drop-off site for the hurricane victims in Chilhowie, Virginia, which is close to the Tennessee and North Carolina borders, and Damascus, Virginia. So that is kind of a neat thing, you know, all the terrible things going on. It, a lot of farmers have stepped up and helped in a number of ways, and it's good that they're finding a way to get those supplies to the people that need them. So they left last weekend and unloaded Tuesday night, expected to return yesterday to Wisconsin. So
that's pretty cool.
Or sorry, nope, next Thursday. A little bit off there, but yeah.
So they're on the trip right now?
Yep.
Sweet.
All right. That'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So this week we talked carryover from herbicide and what to do if you're concerned with that moving into next year for your crop rotation. Our spotlight, we looked at the new E3 Precision Center Pivot System from Ranke. Ag History Minute, we talked about the history of center pivot irrigation. Cool Beans this week was the NAICC and Weed Science Society of America Wisconsin Farm Tour. That's Corny was the abrupt closure of the Pure Prairie Poultry Processing Plant. And Field Good Friday was Wisconsin farmers finding a way to donate and help with hurricane relief. So thanks for listening. And as always, happy farming.